1, 2, 3, 4. Those are numbers, but you already knew that. If you want to know what number you're going to pay each month for your car, use Kelley Blue Book My Wallet on Auto Trader. They're really good at numbers. Auto Trader.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
Hi, I'm Anna Marie Cox, and welcome to With Friends Like These. This week, I am talking to comedian Sophie Santos. We're going to talk about her new memoir, which is surprisingly long for someone in their 20s, but she has a lot to cover. It's called The One You Want to Marry and Other Identities I've Had. The title comes from the reputation of the sorority she joined at the University of Alabama. They were the ones guys wanted to marry. But Sophie didn't get the MRS degree she was pursuing at the time. Today, she's a queer feminist writer and performer, which is still marriage material, sure, but she probably doesn't wear high heels as often. Her journey from the sorority to the stage was not linear, and she was never fake. She just didn't get a handle on herself for a while. As an army brat, Sophie spent her childhood moving a lot, and she experimented with who she was and who she thought she should be. Sophie is white, Hispanic, Asian, and gay. She was also a tackle football player, a beauty queen, a theater kid, and a cam girl. And more. But today, she's herself. I thought it'd be fitting to talk to her about her journey since National Coming Out Day is on Monday. And we'll get to all of that in just a moment. But first, election season is just around the corner, and Vote Save America has created a fund that I want you to know about. This time last year, our Get Mitch Fund raised over $35 million for Senate candidates right before Election Day. How much more could organizers do with that money a year out? Your contribution today will help fund early organizing and lay the foundation for candidates to win next year. That's why we're aiming to reach $600,000, or $100,000 for each of the six key states, by the end of October. Can you chip in today and help us get there? Head to votesave.us/donate now. Again, that's votesave.us/donate. And now, Sophie Santos. Sophie, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited.
So this book is kind of a tour of your identities over the years, I would say.
Yeah, I would say.
I'm going to run through the ones I remember off the top of my head. You played tackle football. You were a tomboy.
Mm-hmm.
You were a cam girl. You were a pageant queen.
We should also say I was a cam girl when I was 13, but we'll explain why.
Yes. Okay. We'll add that. Okay. Cam girl when you were 13, not recently a cam girl,
no,
but 13 year old cam,
yes,
girl, pageant queen, theater kid, sorority sister.
Yes.
And baby dyke. I think that's a lot of them. Did I miss any?
And now New York.
Oh,
well,
yeah. Well,
New York, okay. LA, yeah, comedian.
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm wondering, have you found a through line through all of those?
I don't know why I think that's so funny.
That was the first thing I thought about. It's like, they're all Sophie. So what's Sophie about them?
I just laugh because you sound like my editor. And it's like, what's the through line? And it's like, that's a great question. I think someone who is... someone who is really... likes to go against the grain, and also someone who is slightly competitive, and also just someone who is willing to put themselves out there and put themselves in you know, I think some would say uncomfortable situations. I feel like playing football is an uncomfortable situation because literally you're avoiding getting tackled. being in heels is uncomfortable, but being on stage like that, I think some, if you're not someone who loves to be on stage, that would be, you know, out of the comfort zone. I'm thinking of that. It's a kind of cliche, but that meme or that photo of, like, you know, the circle, right? And then there's like the arrow and it's like, this is where your comfort zone is. And it's like pointing outside. Right. It was on an episode of Girls, you know, I can't tell you what episode, but for Girls fans, that's where I'm pulling this from. And then, yeah, I mean, again, being on stage as a theater person, and then also being a comedian. I mean, I feel like that's really scary for a lot of people who don't do it.
One of the things I hear in that a little bit is all of them are performances.
Of
a story.
Yes, yes.
Now, that's not to say they're not real.
Nope.
Right. But an interesting pattern in these identities is that you kind of study up for them. Like, you prepare for them in some ways. Like, you do research. Like, I'm thinking of the Baby Dyke one in particular. But I feel like even with the sorority sisters, there was a handbook, you know?
Right.
And there was for the pageant girl as well. Like, you prep for them.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're just like, well, of course I did. I mean.
Yeah, yeah, of course I did. I'm type A. You know, I used to prep for, when I first started taking improv classes as a comedian, I was like prepping for them. And I was like, wait, okay, this is the whole point is to just go at the top of your intelligence and to not prepare. I mean, there's definitely structure to it, but also like it's literally you putting yourself out there and not preparing. So that actually was the first time that I was like truly able to let go. Right. But yeah, but they are all performances to an extent. And I like that you brought up, though, that it's not that they weren't real, because that was actually something that I was discussing with one of my editors. One of my editors was like, did she really like being a sorority girl? And my other editor was like, yes. And I was like, yeah, no, I was fully committing to it because A, of the culture that I was in. B, it was like, again, that was just, I always had that sink or swim mentality because of moving around so much as a military kid. And there was no other option, you know, you either sink or you swim. So this was me swimming again. And you know, when you're just like, they kind of promise you the world, you know, they promise mm-hmm. you that they're going to get you in like the top honor societies on campus. And when you're 18, that sounds really fucking cool. And yeah, and so, you know, and so that's all there. And in addition to that, because I had moved around so much, I was really tired of just like having to start over and start over and start over. And so basically being given the handbook of like, if you do X, Y, and Z, which it wasn't X, Y, and Z, it was like A through Z.
And then some footnotes.
And then some footnotes. And then like three times. It was like, right. Yeah, the Encyclopedia Britannica. then you'll succeed. You'll be able to fit in and you'll be fine. And I was so tired of just trying to fit in all the time and like using just my own knowledge that I was like, okay, yeah, I'm done doing this. And let's go, baby. I'm ready. Put me in the heels in the stands as I put me in a dress and heels while I'm at a football game.
You know, the sorority sister chapter of your life is where the book title comes from. And it might be somewhat the most interesting for a lot of people who don't know you except as a comedian, right? It is the most unexpected, perhaps. But you were just talking about the handbook part of it. And I think some people might think that's off-putting, but you know, I moved every 2 years growing up.
Really?
Yeah. Both of my parents were military brats and they just had it in their blood, I guess.
Yeah.
And my dad also was an academic or is an academic and was chasing tenure all the time. But I would have fucking loved a handbook.
Yeah.
You know, like when I was growing up in elementary, middle school, high school, I sometimes actually imagine that there was a handbook that other people got, you know,
yeah,
on the first day of school that I just somehow missed. So
yeah, they passed it out right before you walked in.
Yeah,
the class.
Yeah, right, exactly. And so the idea of getting a handbook of how to behave, like, that sounds like a relief to me.
It was. It was such a relief. It is. And like when I, you know, when I did ultimately move to Alabama when I was 12 and I had moved around so many times, you know, I say 12 times. I don't know. I think the number in the book is like 7 or 8, but still, it's still a lot. You know, once every year, every 2 years, I was like really like itching to move again once we were settled in Alabama. And when we didn't, I felt really uncomfortable. And even now, I'm like, I'm really happy that I have a career where I can be like between New York and LA. And then, you know, when I start to tour as a comedian, like, I think that's going to satisfy that for me. But it is such a thing that's like so ingrained in you. And you're just like, yeah, I'm ready to go. I'm, you know, I'm in the circus and I'm ready to pack it up and get in the clown car and let's go, you know?
Well, there's a freedom to it, right?
Sure. Yeah.
I mean, people who don't move around a lot may just see like the trauma of it. And I think there is trauma associated with it.
Wait, really?
But I actually only recently kind of figured out that all those moves probably were not good for me.
Yeah. Yeah. Same. But, you know, same.
Because I did as a kid, I guess, you know, maybe you have to look on the bright side, right? Which is that you do get to start over with a blank slate, which is helpful with all these different identities, right? Like, you get to be someone new. And did you feel like maybe, because you write also in the book about how you're kind of a naive person.
Yes.
A little bit oblivious.
Yes.
And I'm going to try to connect these two things. Do you feel like you didn't know who you were all these times? I feel like you know who you are now. That's definitely the impression I get from the book. But in going through all this stuff, starting over again and again, I was seduced by just the blank slate part of it. You know, like, I don't know if I thought about who I was, but what about you?
Well, to answer your question about, well, you didn't, it wasn't a question, but you're saying that I was naive. You were saying that I was naive. I just want everyone to know that I, Sophie Santos, I'm going on the record, believed in Santa Claus until I was 13 years old.
I wasn't going to bring it up. So
it's okay. It's okay. In the book. It's the first thing people read. It's literally the first page of the book. So if that gives you any impression.
Yes.
There we go. Mm-hmm. But as far as like knowing who I was, there was a part of me that knew who I was. And if anything, I knew who I was more when I was 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, then when I hit puberty, that's when I lost myself completely. Mm-hmm. I mean, granted, my fashion style has changed tremendously because when I was like 7 through 12, I was wearing exclusively cargo shorts, closed-toed Birkenstocks with tube socks, button-up Hawaiian shirts. I'd slick back my hair and I would part my hair, in the middle like a butt crack and then slick it back with water and then put it in the tightest ponytail that a Category 5 hurricane could not break that thing loose, baby. And there's something, I don't want to call myself charming because that's horrendous.
You can call yourself charming.
No. Well, if you said it. But there is something like to me rolling up every year at a new school dressed like that with that much confidence that I look back and I'm like, you go, girl. You did that. You literally dressed like a cartoon character and took pride in it. And you dress like, you know, if we're talking about gender stereotypes, especially because now we're talking about, you know, early 2000s, you know, like, and that was me, I think, being, you know, an authentic version of myself, you know? And so I knew that. I knew that I loved sort of like boy culture. I knew that I loved being on stage. You know, I would do talent shows and was always in performing arts. Those are things that stuck with me. But as far as like, really just like knowing, like, you know, going on the journey of just like, okay, you know, who is Sophie Santos? Who does she like to associate herself with as far as friends, as far as, you know, the sort of energy that she does give out, right? You know, mm-hmm. which I feel like we give out to the wrong people when we don't know who we are, or we tend to stick into groups that are maybe toxic for us, even as kids, when we don't know who we are, and trying to fit in that way and trying to fit into the sort of social strata that I did not know. And then it only got crazier, of course, when we moved to Alabama, and then I hit puberty, and then like sent my uniform off on an Icelandic send off with a bow and arrow down.
There was a transformation.
Yeah.
Let's talk more concretely a bit about the gender and sexuality portion of identity here.
Yeah.
Because like you said, you felt really at home and authentic in the cargo shorts
mm-hmm.
and Hawaiian shirt. And then you start a journey of kind of femininity stereotypes almost, right?
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to say stereotype because you were different. You were a little bit different in all these different things. Like you had a personality and like, I think you were ironic about some of them.
Mm-hmm.
But you've sent off your cargo shorts with Icelandic funeral.
Yeah. I was always a little bit of a ball buster and I was always a little bit of an asshole. So like that's that.
Yeah. RIP cargo shorts. But then you went full on glam, right?
Yeah. Well, what I thought was glam with my whatever t-shirt. Yeah, sure.
Yeah. and it seems like that was a conscious choice, right?
Yeah.
And that was a few years then after that of like, cam girl, I'm going to call that kind of performing femininity a little bit. Pageant queen, sorority sister. But those were conscious choices.
They were conscious choices. So what's happening is it really is as simple as I hit puberty. And
okay.
I just, which to me, I had always feared because, and it made me really sad. And I talk about it in the book. Because I was so comfortable being this, you know, I guess at the time, maybe non-binary child, you know, really feeling like in my bones that I was like a boy, or at least felt like that's what I connected to the most. And so I mourned puberty. Because I knew that it would take over. And I think it was cut from the book because it was way too deep of a cut. But I think of it as that movie Baby Geniuses. I don't know if anyone remembers the iconic movie Baby Geniuses, where the babies are like, I think they're on a mission and they save the world. But then once they become toddlers, they forget everything that's ever happened. And so one of them, cross over and they no longer remember. You know what it was like before. And so I was like so scared. I was like, I don't want it to take hold of me. I don't want to lose this part of myself. And I had hoped also that puberty would turn me into a boy and that I would stand on my two, you know, one day I would be like, you know, my legs would grow so long and I would like basically be, you know, the size of a basketball player and I'd accidentally hit my head on my light and you know what I mean? And so all these things were happening. So then when I did hit puberty, the literal opposite happened. And there was so much, I guess, estrogen now coursing through my veins that I literally was like, forgot. Well, I crossed over, right? I guess if we're going down, if we're talking about metaphors in that sense. And so then it wasn't even, I guess, yeah, it was a conscious choice, but it was also just like, that's how I felt. I was like, okay, I'm girly. I want to really, you know, it's almost like the inner girly part in my body was just like, I've been waiting for you. And she fully came out and took over. And now I was like, you know, wanting to be a part of the Mean Girls Club and really committed to that.
With Friends Like These is brought to you by Girlfriend Collective. If you're tired of wearing the same black yoga pants over and over again, you may want to add some other options to your rotation. It's time for an activewear refresh. Change things up without letting go of your favorites with Girlfriend Collective. Girlfriend Collective is sustainable, ethically made activewear for everyone. They make cute and comfortable bras, leggings, shorts, tanks, tees, and more. Their sizing is inclusive, ranging from extra, extra small to 6XL. Whether you're working out, running errands, or doing nothing at all, Girlfriend Collective has the functional fabrics, colors, and styles for any activity. Their best-selling leggings are squat-proof, come with pockets, and have different levels of support, whether you need compression or softness. Join the collective today, feel good about what you buy, and comfortable in what you wear. For listeners to this show, Girlfriend Collective is offering $25 off your purchase of $100 or more when you go to girlfriend.com/friends. That's $25 off $100 or more when you go to girlfriend.com/friends, girlfriend.com/friends. With Friends Like These is brought to you by Seed. Did you know that probiotics are a serious science? That kombucha, kimchi, and other fermented foods you're eating, though nutritious and delicious, don't qualify as probiotic according to science. To be most effective, a probiotic must survive the trip to your gut. Seed's ViaCap delivery technology is engineered to survive stomach acid, bile salts, and other enzymes to ensure 100% delivery to the colon. Now, Seed is a vitamin-y thing. It's prebiotics and probiotics. The packaging doesn't look like that. The packaging makes it look like a high-end beauty product that you'd be happy to have on your bathroom shelf, though it's really more related to other things we do in the bathroom besides our makeup. Not all probiotics are created equal. What is the daily symbiotic? Well, it's a broad spectrum with probiotics and prebiotics. It's a unique formulation of 24 distinct probiotic strains in scientifically studied dosages, and the systemic benefits are beyond the gut. Seed has a proprietary 2-in-1 capsule that protects probiotics going through digestion to ensure delivery to the colon. What does the daily symbiotic do for you? It supports benefits in and beyond the gut, including your GI functions, skin health, heart health, gut immune function, gut barrier integrity, and micronutrient synthesis of vitamins B9 and B12. Gut immune function is not the same as boosting the immune system. It is about supporting the crosstalk between your intestinal cells and your immune cells. Many people taking Seed see improvements in digestion within 24 to 48 hours, which can include bowel movement regularity and ease bloating. This is my experience as well. Start a new healthy habit today. Visit seed.com/friends and use code friends to redeem 20% off your first month's supply of Seed's daily symbiotic. That's seed.com/friends and use code friends for 20% off your first month of Seed's daily symbiotic. With Friends Like These is brought to you by BetterHelp. What interferes with your happiness? Does it change every week? It can. For me, there are new annoyances every week. Right now, Texas can't decide what season it is to the extent that Texas has seasons. It's cold in the morning and then up to 90 at night. And that seems like a minor thing to complain about, but it's new and I hate change. BetterHelp will assess your needs and match you with your own licensed professional therapist. You can connect in a safe and private online environment, making it so convenient you can begin communicating in under 24 hours. It's not self-help, it's professional counseling. Send a message to your counselor anytime and you'll get a prompt and thoughtful response. You also can schedule weekly phone or video sessions, all without ever having to sit in an uncomfortable waiting room. BetterHelp is committed to facilitating great therapeutic matches, so they make it easy and free to change counselors if needed. The service is available for clients worldwide, and it's more affordable than traditional offline counseling, though financial aid is also available. There's a broad range of expertise that you may not be able to get locally. Licensed professional counselors specialize in depression, anger, stress, anxiety, relationships, sleeping, or trauma. Anything you share is confidential. You can check out the testimonials posted daily to their site. In fact, so many people have been using BetterHelp, they're recruiting additional counselors in all 50 states. I want you to start living a better life today. As a listener, you'll get 10% off your first month by visiting betterhelp.com/friends. Join over 1 million people who've taken charge of their mental health. That's BetterHelp, betterhelp.com/friends.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader, like that car riding right your tail. Or if you're tailgating right now, all those cars doubling as kitchens and living rooms are on AutoTrader too. Are you working out and listening to this ad at the same time? Well, multitasking pro, cars like the ones in the gym parking lot are for sale on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
And you know, just to speak from my own kind of experience of puberty and crossing over, because I do think you forget a lot about yourself sometimes, in that it is easier if you're, you know, identified by the outside world as a girl. That's where your handbook is.
Right.
Right? Like, that's where you're going to go. If you are anywhere in the middle, like, you're just going to be like, I don't have a handbook for the one people don't think I am.
Correct.
So I have kind of this, like, cultural handbook that's been driven into me for the girl one. So I completely understand. That's just, like, again, I just give me some instructions. Tell me how I can get an A. If I can get an A in this.
100%.
Then maybe...
Yeah, I was trying to, that's how I live my life. I was always trying to get the A, literally in every aspect of my life.
And that is something that's a through line too. Like you said, a little bit competitive, but I would say that all of these identities, from pageant queen to tackle football to baby dyke, you were going for the A.
Yeah.
You were. And as a cam girl too. So let's talk about that, because it's an extraordinary section of the book to me. You write so frankly about coming of age, as they might say in more gauzy conversations. But, you know, straight up whacking off, I would say, is another way to put it. And being just super, super horny.
Yeah.
And you took matters into your own hands.
Literally. Yeah. Yeah. Well, to me, it was really important for me to write down... I think some people are pointing in a positive way, the cringiness, right? The cringeworthiness of the book, and like how I really go there. And they're talking about my sexual exploits because we don't talk about what, you know, girls go through when we go through puberty and our own horniness. And the only things that I really had to go off of, and I talk about it in the book, is like American Pie or any sort of just like teenage boy. Any movie ever that has a teenage boy, there's some sort of joke about them, you know, jerking off to porn. And it's like, I didn't have anything to go off of. And it wasn't talked to.
No handbook.
There was no handbook. And it wasn't talked about. It wasn't talked about in my house. And I was like, we're still not there as a society when we talk about, like, you know, female pleasure and like going through puberty as young girls and like actually what that means and not just like, oh, our boobs grow and now we like thongs. It's like really like, you know, we're doing the same thing thinking about Paul Dillon in our rooms as 13-year-olds as Paul Dillon is doing about us. And I really wanted to write that down. And I thought, and that was such an important part, not only of my story, but I just felt like needed to be included because I never had that. And I wanted other people to be able to have that, even though, you know, yeah, now people know how I masturbated for the first time or me having a cam.
Pretty graphic. And I will say, I'm slightly older than you are, maybe a lot older. And I still have some discomfort around this, but I feel emboldened by your writing. So if you've touched one person, maybe I shouldn't use that metaphor. And I have some questions about this section.
Yeah, no, ask me away. I mean, this is why we're here. We're here to talk about it. Are you blushing?
A remote control. I am. Yeah. I am blushing.
Okay. All right. Well, here we are.
A remote control, Sophie?
I had no idea what to do. And I just knew that downstairs, which I call my tootie.
Yes.
Which was just something that I had called, you know, as a young child, I had called my vagina tootie, you know.
Yes, tootie has a mind of her own. It's really less your vagina than I think the other parts. But
yes,
okay.
Right. I should know exactly. As a lesbian, I should know what.
I know what was talking to you, and it wasn't the inner space. It was the hungry.
It was the hungry part. We'll call it that. And so I call her Tootie, and she's personified in the book, right. And really wants to be scratched. And she has an itch and wants to be scratched. And I just And so again, because I hadn't seen anything, I was like, and my cousin at the time was basically said, you know, try a remote. And so I'm not thinking, you know, oh, I should rub up against the remote, which makes sense, right? That makes sense. I'm thinking
I would be completely baffled.
Yeah.
Just honestly, like couch arm, I get it.
Right. Which I didn't understand, wasn't there yet. And so,
but the remote control. Anyway, so she says the remote control is your friend.
And then that was really all I got out of her. And so then I just like inserted it. And I was like, well, this isn't helping. And it also hurts. And this doesn't feel good at all.
But did you get cable? That's the only question.
Yeah, somehow it turned on Seinfeld. And I was just watching Seinfeld for the next 10 hours. So... That's the power.
But that leads, but so the confusion here leads to the cam girl, actually.
Right.
Like that's.
Well, after removing said remote, I realized that, oh, whatever was pulsing just needed to have attention drawn to it. So then I joke and I rode Lammy, who is still my comfort animal to this day. I've had since I was a baby, right. And I rode her to Wyoming until, you know, I saw, you know, the mountains. And, you know, so then.
I mean, we all work it out somehow, most of
us. Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And Lammy came to your rescue.
And she came to my rescue, and she did one for the team. But the cam girl.
But I was going to say, there's a connection here with the cam girl part for me, because you were just kind of like trying to figure this out.
Yeah.
Like, how do I get off?
Yeah, exactly. And I was like so horny. And, you know, when I would hear my friends at school talk about, well, they wouldn't really be talking about horniness. They would just, when I would just like kind of want to, you know, broach the subject, I could tell that this was not a conversation I could be having, because, you know, girls doing anything to themselves for pleasure is gross or slutty or anything like that. So I just knew that I wasn't able to confide in them, but I knew that I was so horny. I was like, well, what can I do? And I just, via Skype in my room, I started, what we call DMing now, but just messaging boys from across town. And we'd get on video on grainy webcams, and the webcams that like the Logitech webcams that are like plugged in. And it was strictly P for V. And, you know, they would take off, you know, their clothes, and I would take off my clothes, and we would, you know, we would, I guess, have virtual sex together and then log off. And then I'd do it over and over again. And until it was like, I felt so empowered.
You felt empowered.
Yeah,
this,
I did.
While it was happening, after it was happening, like did that power come from being able? I can't believe I'm going down this road, but I am curious, because I think this is a blank space in our culture. You're right. But did that power come from being able to get yourself off? Did it come from having these guys kind of need you or want you? Where were you? Why'd you feel like Molly?
I think it's both. Like I was able to get what I wanted, but also like it was clearly consensual. And also, it felt really cool to be like, I'm really horny, without saying, you know, without saying that I had to be like, you know, coy about it. And then to have, you know, all these boys be equally as horny and be like wanting to participate, that I felt like, I was like, oh my God, like, I'm like a star over here. I'm able to like get off and they enjoy it and they like, they're coming to me and I have all these boys coming to me. Like, it felt empowering, obviously, until the shoe dropped.
I was going to say nothing good can last. I did, even when I was reading this, I did think, gosh, you know, Sophie, having the guys be just across town, I don't know. I don't know if that's enough distance. And sure enough.
And sure enough, I moved to the school that I was.
Yeah.
Playing webcam sex with the boys. And it, you know, it wasn't even that. It was just like, it was starting to get around town anyway. Cause I was like, I wasn't just doing it with just kids from the high school that I ultimately went to, but I was doing it with boys that went to school just in the county and, you know.
And you're having a blast.
I'm having the, like, best time. Having a great
literally,
time.
Literally, I guess, you know, and that we have to, well, you know, gotta shut that down. Like, you know, we can't handle that as a society, a girl out there having a blast, coming over and over and over, like, by herself. That is bad.
And ruining the boys of the county. Yeah, ruining. I ruined those boys. Yeah.
You.
Single-handedly.
So you wind up, yes, people find out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, people find out. Yeah. So people find out at the new school, and I really want to go to this new school because they had an amazing musical theater program. And I also, like, academically, the other school that I was at was just not with it. And so I go to this new school, and then I start to see the boys that I had been seeing on the internet. And like, I knew that they went there, but it was different from being like in via grainy webcam to like actually seeing them in the flesh. And then realizing that some of these boys had girlfriends or just even not, but just like seeing them in the hallways. And I was just like, oh my God. And obviously, like, that was like the first thing, I was just so paranoid that people knew, because I just didn't want to be shamed, and I could feel the shame creeping in. And then like the meanest of the, like the bully of the school, like, came up to me and was just like, people are talking about you, that you do stuff. And, you know, and then the word slut was thrown around, and it was horrifying. And I, you know, I remember, like, I wouldn't even walk past the student section at a football game. Because I was so scared everyone would be looking at me and being like, there's that girl who's like the slut that's doing all those slutty things, you know, on camera, you know, the new girl. You know, there's nothing worse than being a new girl, but then also like having a scarlet letter, right? And yeah, it was really hard. It was really hard. And I felt my power completely, you know, disintegrate.
I read that section with some horror, you know.
Which part?
And a lot of empathy. the getting found out.
Right, yeah.
Because it seems like it's like the plot of a, you know, emo teen movie. I believe literally it might be the plot of something.
Could be, or could be soon.
Yeah.
And, Hollywood.
But you got over it, or you got through it.
I did get through it. And I eventually, like, well, again, it was the sink or swim mentality and I didn't have a choice. And I started associating myself with, like, you know, I found friends and, you know, and eventually after my sophomore year, I became really good friends with the girls who were friends with those boys. And it kind of just went away. And also, like, I never confirmed it. So, you know, it was just like, it was, you know, did it happen? Did it not? No, who's to say? I say now.
You cultivated an air of mystery.
Yeah, exactly. And then I was like, once I became really good friends with the girl who was like the most liked at school, and I didn't become friends just because she was the most liked, but it was just like we did become really good friends. And ultimately, she was also probably the love of my life. Well, she was a love of my life at the time. I just didn't realize it. You know, I felt like I had some extra armor, and I was protected.
I want to take a quick break and then come back and talk about the love of your life. With Friends Like These is brought to you by Best Fiends. If you've been listening to the show for a while, you've heard me talk about Best Fiends. In my humble but also correct opinion, it is the best Match 3 style game by far. The rest are kind of the same game with different color schemes and characters. So stop crushing the same candy and try a puzzle game with something fresh to offer. With Best Fiends, you play through an actual storyline, complete with good guys, the fiends, and the not so good guys, the slugs. Your fiends start out as wee baby versions of their future selves. The more you play, the more fiends join your team, and the more powerful they become, helping you solve increasingly challenging puzzles as you progress through the game. It's an action-packed adventure and a brain-boosting puzzle game all rolled into one, with new content added all the time. You will never get bored. Best Fiends has literally thousands of levels. You will not be able to finish them ever. Ever. There's always a fresh challenge waiting for me when I need a mental pick-me-up. Download Best Fiends for free today on the App Store or at Google Play. That's Best Fiends, friends without the R, at the App Store or Google Play. With Friends Like These is brought to you by Joybird. Now, you have probably had a pretty terrible couple of years, like we all have. In my terrible year, though, I bought a house. And making this house mine is the best thing that's happened to me in, I don't know, a decade. It is something that gives me joy. It's just walking into a space that is completely mine, completely personalized. I chose every little bit of furniture, every decoration, every book on the shelf, every flower in the vase. Your home should show off what makes you, you. And Joybird's selection of customizable furniture and modern home decor lets you bring your unique style into your space. Joybird offers modern, customizable furniture for every space available in a variety of vibrant, durable fabric options. And Joybird's semi-annual sale is here. I have a Joybird armchair, and what I will say about that is it's timeless, but also cool, and it's gone with just about every decor I've ever tried. It's also very, very durable. And that's what's interesting about a piece of furniture that you love and you choose. It's always going to go with everything else that you love. Ordering furniture online has never been easier or more fun. Choose from over 18,000 customizable options or browse curated collections to find the perfect fit for your one-of-a-kind style. Book a virtual showroom appointment to chat with a showroom stylist from the comfort of your own home. If you are unsure where to start, Joybird's design specialists are standing by to make your vision a reality for free. With Joybird's protection plan, your upholstery and leather pieces will always look as good as new without having to treat them as though they're in a museum. Joybird is committed to creating quality furniture and a more sustainable future. Each piece is made with incredible care using responsibly sourced materials free of harmful chemicals. Through partnerships with groups like One Tree Planted, Joybird is helping conserve and restore Earth's most precious natural resources. Quality craftsmanship, stain and scratch resistant fabrics, a limited lifetime warranty. Joybird can handle anything your family throws at it. Literally. Joybird stands by its quality and craftsmanship. If it's not everything you hoped for, send it back. Create a space that brings you joy with Joybird. Visit joybird.com/friends and get 30% off your purchase. That's 30% off at joybird.com/friends. We want to tell you about a show that we think our listeners will really enjoy. Before you judge it by the name, which is not safe for work, give it a listen because you won't be disappointed. The show is Uneffing the Republic, or UNFTR for short. It's a smart, funny, and really well-produced show that the New York Times called one of the top podcasts to listen to in the post-Trump era. UNFTR offers a thorough analysis of socioeconomic and political issues with an appropriate level of profanity given the subject matter. They cover everything from the economics of racism and mass incarceration to indigenous rights and climate change. Oh, and they hate, I mean really hate, Milton Friedman. We also love that UNFTR is not only listener-supported through memberships, but it's also funded through a unique partnership with a native coffee roasting company in an effort to support indigenous economic development. Visit UNFTR.com or search UNFTR on your podcast app. You can also sign up for the Uneffing the Republic newsletter for free at UNFTR.substack.com. So check out Uneffing the Republic at UNFTR.com.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on Auto Trader. Just you wait. Auto Trader.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
I want to switch gears just a little bit, although I guess it's still about identities and change, but you mentioned this girl in high school, love of your life, and you eventually come out as a lesbian.
Yes.
It takes a little while. And that's fine. It's all fine. We all go on our own journeys. Mm-hmm. No shade on that, right? But it's particularly interesting to me because your resistance isn't religious or political at all. Like, it's just resistance. Like, you just didn't want to say. I don't know. Explain it to me. Because you literally start making out with girls and say, actually, not just making out. You go down on a girl, and then first thing out of your mouth afterwards is, I'm not gay.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes, that's exactly what happened. I will say for just the sake for them, they are, they do go by they, them now. Right. And they are trans. And shout out to Gabe, because Gabe and I are still friends, by the way.
You went down on a person.
Yes.
And immediately afterwards...
And immediately afterwards,
wiping your mouth,
I shouted, I'm not gay, and ran away. Yes. And we were in a gravel parking lot.
In a fraternity's gravel parking lot. So,
which I thought we were very...
You know how to put on a show, Sophie. You know how to put on a show. I will say that for you.
Should have sold tickets. Listen, I thought we were far. I thought we were like down the street. I didn't realize we were in front of that fraternity house.
But like your mom was an ally, like you were sort of very, you know, positive, like LGBTQ positive as a kid even.
Yeah.
But there's something there.
Yeah. Well, I think it's because I never, it comes down to representation. And I mean, I can't just blame it just on representation, right? But this is why representation...
No blame. It's not blame. It's just a story. But
this is why representation is so important, is because like I thought every lesbian looked like Ellen. Like, honestly, or look like my mom's friends who, you know, beautiful human beings. I think they would identify as bull dykes, you know? And so I really thought that that's what a lesbian looked like. And so, and also when I went through puberty and didn't make the connection that like, oh, these close friendships with my girl space friends are, you know, more than just close friendships, you know, these like really intense feelings that I'm having are more so crushes, because I didn't make that, I didn't recognize that. Then when I finally was in my early 20s and, I met someone who, made me feel the way that I had felt going through puberty. So I call it my lesbian puberty 2.0. It literally was an awakening, and it was like all of these things that I had, you know, clearly had been building towards, you know, the gates finally opened, and I was like, I was terrified, because I thought, I just genuinely thought, I was like, when I would have figured out I was gay, if I knew I was gay, I would have figured it out when I was 13. That's what I thought happened. I didn't realize that it's not necessarily linear. And that it can happen later in life. And now that I'm, you know, older than my early 20s, I will say that's still not even that old, you know? So yeah, I was so confused.
To me, it speaks to how powerful the cultural messages are.
Right.
Around femininity, around sexuality, because it you can be a, you know, well-meaning liberal person, But still, those cultural messages are going to bind up what you think your options are.
Yeah. Yeah. And it wasn't in our, it really wasn't in our society to, there was no, again, no handbook on this is what happens when you realize that you're, you know, when you realize you might be a queer kid. And God bless my parents. I mean, they were so supportive when they outed me. I didn't come out to my parents. They both outed me later on, but I think they wanted me to figure out my own journey, and I didn't think they wanted to, you know, to tell me what I was, and they, you know, wanted me to figure it out. So, and I also think it was weirdly the universe probably helping me, because I think probably coming out in Alabama, especially in a town called Arab, spelled Arab, pronounced Arab.
Yeah, you might have, there might have been some self-protective stuff going on there too.
Yeah, for sure.
I think that's
for
wise.
Sure.
Yes, that's very wise. Yeah, let's talk just a little about your parents, because so your mom was a Southern Belle, basically, right?
Mom was a Southern Belle, yes.
And your dad was a Filipino career army guy.
Yeah, Filipino Spanish, lieutenant colonel.
A ranger, is that right?
Tanker ranger, yeah. He's going to really appreciate.
Very impressive.
Appreciate.
Hoorah.
There you go. He's going to really appreciate that you said this, by the way.
My dad did ranger parachute school. Wasn't a ranger.
An army?
Jump. Yeah. Yeah. Jumped out of perfectly good airplanes, as they say.
Yeah. Yes, that is what they say. That is what they say.
Yep. And it's an identity we haven't talked about, is the Filipino part.
Mm-hmm.
And I found your writing about that kind of interesting, because you were in Arab, right?
Mm-hmm.
And what you write about is just feeling like the other,
mm-hmm.
just kind of ambiguously the other.
Yeah.
Do you think that had impact on your other sort of identities?
I don't know if they had an impact on it, but I think like it definitely was just another thing that I had to deal with, you know? When I actually recognized I was an other, though, was when I was still in Kansas City and I was taking an SAT test, and I had to, or it's not the SAT, obviously, because I was in like sixth grade, but it's like the PSAT, and they're just getting you ready for, you know, to take standardized tests for the rest of your life. And I was, you know, had to fill out the census survey. And mind you, I was like such a kiss ass to this one teacher, because I also like was so in love with her, Miss Rast, shout out wherever you are. And so I would constantly go up and ask her questions, and like, you know, she knew that I was just trying to get attention. So this was a conflicted situation, because like I'm raising my hand to ask a question, you know, about like, how should I fill out the census survey? And she thinks that I'm just, again, just trying to get her attention. But really I was actually confused, because it was telling me like, when you look at the bubbles, it was like Hispanic, not white, white, not Hispanic, which I was both. And we're talking like 2000 and, I don't know, early 2000 census surveys. And obviously they've changed a little bit, but like not by much, because I still see Hispanic, not white, white, not Hispanic. And I just was like, didn't know what to do. And I didn't know what to put. And I also, like, once I finally like suffered through it and figured it out, and like 15 minutes have gone by and like everyone is already taking the test, and now I'm like behind taking the test and freaking out. I then realize once I start the test that I completely forgot the Asian Pacific Islander part. And I was like, oh my God, I joke in the book, I'm like, I forgot about Peepaw, which was what we called my grandfather, which by the way is not a Filipino thing. That's just... It's not a Filipino thing to call your grandfather Peepaw. I thought it was a Filipino thing, and my Filipino like friends will like, you know, will, or my, you know, people that are people of color that I'm friends with will be just roast me for that, because I genuinely thought that's what you called your Filipino grandfather, and they're like, no, that's the whitest thing I've ever heard. I was like, okay. But anyway, basically back to the census survey. Yeah, that's when I first discovered that something was off, and not necessarily off, but you know, I was an other. So, and there is another box, which I did start eventually just checking just to be sane.
It is kind of a tragically beautiful metaphor that we have an other box, you know, like there's just other, you know, other. It's just you figure it out. Other.
Yeah, literally. So. I don't know what to tell you. I don't know what to tell you, kid. Figure it out. Literally.
Your dad was in the military. And he seems to have been, I would say, somewhat preoccupied with preparedness, like being prepared for bad things to happen. Is that safe to say?
That is like, that's safe to say, but like, that's not even close. We'd say neurotic. We'd say paranoid. Okay. We'd say, oh, yeah. Right.
Yeah, like he's the kind of guy who has a go bag packed all the time. Is that?
Yeah, go bag at the ready. Kind of, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You write about that in your childhood as definitely being a part of, like, you've thought about that as a kid. And I'm curious if that continues to be something that you think about in your life.
Well, I definitely think my sort of paranoia stemmed from that, at least because, like, he used to send me anti-terrorism PowerPoint manuals, you know, that he would receive. And so that way, like, I was always ready just in case there was a terrorist attack. Like, and he'd send it, especially when we went on vacations. But, like, and I still have the anti-terrorism PowerPoint training manual, which is, like, 100 pages. And he literally emailed me and said, make sure to go over all of this. There are quizzes in the back before we leave. And I was like... You know,
but he was serious.
100% serious.
Yeah. I want to just be real careful to not draw like a direct line between that and your own OCD. It seems like it gave you a specific thing to worry about, if nothing else, like it at least to begin with. And it seems clear that your anxiety, like all of our anxiety, grows and blossoms and becomes its own thing.
Yeah, especially when you're not working through it. Yeah, I didn't, so I wasn't scared at the time. I was just like, especially because when he would send those things, I think by that time I was like, you know, late teens, and I was just like, whatever, dad, you know, and making fun of him for it. But yeah, when my OCD peaked and my anxiety peaked, because I was like in the middle of a tornado that destroyed my university, that destroyed like a lot of the University of Alabama, where I was at the time. That was like my first almost like near death experience. And then everything collapsed in my brain. And then I was scared to just go to a local pizza joint because I would think that some sort of terrorist would blow it up. Or I would be scared to even go to sleep in my house because I'm like, there's going to be a sinkhole or a plane's going to fall out of the sky and all of these irrational fears. And I don't blame my dad at all for the manuals. And I don't think they actually go hand in hand, but I will say, like, you know, I did start to believe that those things could happen. And, you know, until I got help.
Yeah, I want to be real clear. I don't think there's a direct line at all. I think sometimes it's just those things that we pick up on in childhood give our, you know, neuroses and various mental disorders, like something to grab onto.
100%. Yeah. Yeah. And I also, if anything, I like had wished I was could find the manual in my email that I couldn't find at the time. So I would know what to do, but honestly, I think that would have made me even more like, it would have made me believe, and nosedive into something that wasn't real, right? Like obviously things happen in life, but you know, they are irrational fears.
But this bottoming out in terms of those mental health diagnoses, you wound up getting some help.
Yeah, I did get help. I was went to an outpatient facility where I was in therapy 8 hours a day, and I had a van come and pick me up. And this was right after I was like, I had just finished my sophomore year at Alabama. So, and I had like literally a month before I was like out with my friends drinking, you know, doing the thing. And then, you know, the tornado hit my brain basically. And so I was like, no longer felt like I could drive. I thought like I would somehow jerk the wheel off the road or a semi would come and hit me. And so I was now like in a van being taken to this facility, being dropped off and then being dropped back off at home every single day for 2 weeks for 8 hours a day. And at first I was really against it because I was like, I'm normal. Like what? Like it's fine. And, you know, but thank God for both my parents who were like, you know, recognized, and especially my mom because she was around me. And as a nurse, she knew that I wasn't in a healthy mental state, and it was the best thing that happened to me.
Let's fast forward. Who are you now? What's the identity you have today?
Oh, the identity that I have today is... well, definitely queer and a lesbian. And I like to say that because I feel like a lot of times there's this whole horrible narrative that being queer, being a lesbian is a phase. And I went through so many phases. And that's why I label the third phase as this is the phase that isn't a phase. So I do like to throw that out there because, you know, we need to start recognizing that, and we are as a society, but, you know, we're not for men's pleasure. This is not about you, men. I'm not even sorry to say. It's just not about you. And so, you know, I'm queer and I'm a lesbian and I feel very confident about that. Is this the time where I say, and I'm a I'm a wife and I'm a mother and I'm a son and I'm a daughter?
Oh, we're not in a pageant yet. So
which none of
we
those,
don't have to do that.
None of those are real.
You mentioned that your parents outed you. What was it like to tell them that you'd figured it out? Like, you had two conversations with your parents, both of which they were like, why don't you have... I think it was kind of, why don't you have a girlfriend, if I recall correctly. But what happened when you finally were like, okay, this is me?
Like, not the time where they outed me and I was, like, scared?
You can talk about that if you want, but I'm both, maybe. Like, it is interesting to me that they both, I think, asked you really, I mean, like any parent would, out of concern for your happiness.
They did. I mean, my mom asking me was just in her truest fashion because she's just such a crass Southern Belle, you know, unfiltered person. And so we were driving down the road and I had been like watching. We were living together at the time. And I had been holding myself up in my room watching The L Word and telling her about it because I was like, you know, she was my roommate and I was like, I'm watching the show, but I would just kept going back and in and out. And then and to the point where then I just stopped coming out of my room except to eat and to go to the restroom, for weeks. And then class. And we were driving down the road and she just like turned down the music and was like, honey, when are you going to stop diddling yourself to The L Word and get yourself a real woman? And I was humiliated. I just said, I'm working on it.
Fair answer. And then I
didn't bring it up again. And I was like horrified. So, yeah, so that's how she outed me. Oh, no, my dad was actually after. Because at this point I had a girlfriend. I had my first girlfriend and my college girlfriend, which I think for a lot of people, you know, unless you're high school sweethearts, that's like a pretty significant first relationship. And I had, I was eating with him at a restaurant. I was just on a break from a rehearsal and he took me out to lunch and he was just asking me really, you know, simple questions, which I always chalk it up. It's like, especially with dads, they don't really know what's actually going on in your life. So they just ask you the most basic questions possible to the point where they're asking you about friends that you haven't been friends with for 10 years. You know what I mean? And then finally he was like, so kiddo, you got a boyfriend? And I was like, no, as I was like stuffing a chimichanga in my mouth, like trying not to choke. And then he's like, okay. And then it was like dead silence, of course, because he also is very, a very silent individual. And he goes, well, you have a girlfriend? And I lied and said no. And then eventually was like, well, I guess this is your, if he's asking, this is your chance, Santos. And I piped up and I was like, no, actually, yeah, I have a girlfriend, you know, very squeaky voice, very much like, you know, yeah, just stuttering all over the place. And he goes, well, you know, you always had good female relationships, which was a big mind blowing moment because it's like he had recognized all these years and yet I'm now being told this fascinating thing about my life.
Would you say the implication of going through these different identities, and again, emphasize, they're all real, you're not faking it. Do you feel more yourself today?
Oh my God, yeah. I feel completely myself. I'm like so, I'm just finally so just like, well, as my mom said, which is in the epilogue, that I used to be so frenzied and it's nice to see me so calm. And I know that people who are friends with me, they're like, this bitch, she's not that calm, you know, cause I'm type A and I'm always, you know, really, but I think those are two different things as far as like being type A, trying to get shit done versus just being calm and light as a person and trying to just really be, you know, centered and trying to be present and things like that. And I do feel like, you know, I mean, obviously I know that I'm going to keep growing, but I'm really trying to grow into the direction of, you know, building on this foundation that I've been building on, this identity that I've been building on for like 5-6 years. And, you know, and a lot of that I have to thank to my queerness, because I think like, and I think a lot of queer people can relate. Obviously I don't want to speak for the whole community, but when you finally are like, when you're finally able to accept being gay and letting that be a part of your identity, because it's not my whole identity at all, it's almost like you're finally free and you can really just be, you can just be. And that to me was like taking the shackles off in my brain and just, I was like, oh my God, here I go. And, you know, and now as a person, as a comedian, like centering my comedy around my queerness, you know, feeling empowered to sort of like, you know, especially being a TV writer, like having queerness be a major part of my writing and not just like, you know, in my lifestyle and, you know, in dating and stuff like that. Like, yeah, I've just, you know, I'm in a place that, it took me a long time to get here, but I'm so happy.
I can't think of a better way to end the conversation. Although I would love to talk further.
I would love to talk further too, but
Sophie, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me. I'm very honored. This has been really cool and hopefully we can chat again.
I loved talking to Sophie Santos about how she's landed at the beautiful place she is in her life. Again, her book is called The One You Want to Marry and Other Identities I've Had. And a reminder, Monday, October 11th is National Coming Out Day. It's the 34th year in a row that this day has been celebrated to raise awareness and support for the LGBTQ+ community. This show is a product of Crooked Media. Andy Gardner-Bernstein is our producer. Patrick Antonetti is our audio editor. And please, take care of yourselves.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on Auto Trader. Just you wait. Auto Trader.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.